It's the third Wednesday in the month of August, so it's time for another edition of Inspired On Air, which this week will actually be focusing on the upcoming September Lincoln Book Festival. But before we actually move into two sensational authors who will be part of the 2019 Lincoln Book Festival, we were delighted to actually welcome public relations specialist Kerry Hopkins to the studios. And the first question we actually put to Kerry was, what project has she actually recently been setting up?
So I founded a non-profit entity called the Broadcast Club, which helps female spokespeople in the FTSE 100, but it also helps the PRs as well. So at the moment, what you're finding is on the BBC, on ITV, on Sky News, you'll have seen a lot more women on TV recently. And that's down to a campaign that started in 2013 called the Expert Women Campaign by a lady called Professor Liz Howell from City University in London. Now, what happened was that she was listening to Radio 4 and they were talking about pregnancy and it was four men. And she thought, this is getting ridiculous now. There really are a lot of female experts. They should be getting on the news as well. And that's true. There's almost 50-50, if you look at government figures, 50-50 split between male and female highly skilled professionals. So there's no reason why women shouldn't be going on television and radio as experts as well. But there's a lot of reasons why they don't, which is something I've been studying since, well, 2011 actually, when I did a master's in TV journalism, about why aren't there as many female comedians on TV as male comedians. So it's really important that companies put forward, you know, the PRs put forward male spokespeople and female spokespeople, because at the moment, the BBC, for example, have got a strict policy where they only take half of the experts as male and half as female. And this is called Project 50-50, and that came in April this year, so it's very new. So what you're finding is now when a journalist phones a company and says, look, there's a breaking news story, could we get your expert on to comment on it? And if they don't have a woman to put forward and the panel in the in the TV studio is all men, they'll say, sorry, we can't, you know, put your company forward. So this is getting sort of really serious now, where PRs and companies do need to start putting men and women forward to make sure their organisation gets on air. There was one company in the FTSE 100, when the interest rates were announced, they said, well, we'd like to get our, you know, spokesperson to react to this story. We know they're a big finance company. And because they didn't have a woman, they unfortunately couldn't get on that day. So I think now PRs and CEOs and HRs are waking up to this fact. So what we've done in the Broadcast Club is we've done a survey of the FTSE 100. It took absolutely ages. It was a lot of in-depth research. We wrote to every CEO to tell them what we were doing. Then we wrote to every director of corporate communications to let them know we were doing this poll and to ask them to fill this poll out. Now, what we've found is we will be announcing the results in the House of Commons on the 3rd of September. We've got a fantastic panel. I've got the ITV News acting editor, Rachel Corp, on the panel. We've got a BBC TV news reader, Simon McCoy, hosting and chairing the event. And we've got a senior journalist, Nina Goswami, from the BBC, also on the panel. We hopefully are going to get the Secretary of State there as well. We might be able to get a minister if Nicky Morgan, the Secretary of State for DCMS, is not available. That's the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. And they're going to be responding to these findings. Now, we are just collating the findings at the moment. Would you like me to give you a bit of an insight into
them?
Let's
just hold it there for the moment, Kerry, because I'd like to bring in Emma at this particular stage. Emma, you've been listening to this. You've done a bit of research yourself into this topic. I think you said it was quite fascinating from your own point of view. Hopefully good news as well. Emma, questions from yourself.
Well, I was quite surprised that it started in 2013, really. Do you think that there's been it's been quite a slow process, or have there been any setbacks in those years?
When you say surprised, you mean that's early or late?
Well, late in a way, but also the fact that it's been quite a while and it's only just now that the BBC have put through changes.
Yeah, I mean, because you are basically women, it's not just because they put change. My study showed that because you put changes in doesn't mean that, you know, the next year we're going to have half-half. Mm. We've got a
lot. We're British, Kerry. We like to leave things for the manana, really. Leave a lot of things through. We can't just rush these things through.
Yeah.
After all, equal pay took quite some time to get there, and we still haven't got there, really.
Yeah, and also women just, they don't necessarily put themselves forward. It's a natural thing. It's because of the brainwashing we've had. Not just brainwashing, but the messages we've been having for the last few centuries, because that wasn't a woman's role years ago. But things, you know, women have changed their mind now. So, but, I mean, I've spoke to really senior experts, including doctors and professors, and they go, well, I'm not really sure I'm an expert in that area, the females. And I'm like, well, you know. So it's just the fact that they don't realise how good they are.
The whole issue about positive discrimination, and I think I can acknowledge from an academic's point of view, it certainly is a critical aspect of balance and ensuring that representation is fair. Do you find that, Kerry, sometimes you'll get folk, and there might be listeners to this very actual interview, saying, oh, here we go again, etc., from both male and female, and that also is a bit challenging to actually work through? It's a hurdle that needs to be overcome?
I definitely don't want to see a woman on air who's not very good just because she's a woman when there's a man that would have been brilliant, but I don't want to see any of that. And also that will turn off the listeners. If broadcasters do start doing that, the listeners will just vote. I mean, it's so easy to change the channel now. In the old days on television, you had to get up and change the channel, and probably there's only one other channel anyway. But now with digital, you know, with your phone even controlling things, you can just switch it off very simply. So it's a case of making the women really good so that they can be good on air.
Which is really where the training package comes together from that point of view. I mean, Emma, you've done a fair amount of media material with us in terms of location reports up in York and so on and so forth. How have you found that experience? I mean, the sort of thing that Kerry's been talking about, were you initially a bit reluctant and reticent? And is it a case of the more you do, the better you get, the more confident you become and so on?
I do think it is a case of the more you do, the better you get. It's a, you know, practice makes perfect kind of thing, but the initial going for it, like we said, putting yourself out there and everything, is quite a daunting thing, really. So I can see why some women are reluctant to do it. But it is a shame that people don't, that women don't think of themselves as experts in a field, really.
What you'll find is, when you said about the daunting thing, I bet when I do the House of Commons event, I'll get loads of women coming up to me beforehand going, God, are you nervous? Are you nervous? And it's that meant, you know, I won't be nervous. Well, I mean, I might be a bit, but it would be more of an, I try to change it into an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
You know, basically, the fear, people get nervous because it's just purely fear of rejection. So if I already know that a third of the audience is probably going to reject me anyway, because that's the human life, it's the law of life. If I think they should teach this thing to children in school, the three rule. A third of the people that you meet are going to love you. A third are going to be like, they're okay. Take them or leave them. A third aren't going to like you. And that's what you're like as well. And that's what everybody's like and every listener's like. So that's the rule of life. So as long as I already accept myself, I know that I would imagine probably a third in that room aren't going to like me. So that's fine because I know that two thirds are. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So it's basically, you know, I'm not going to be nervous particularly. This is the thing that women need to, not all women, but some women. I don't get those comments from men.
Yeah.
They're a lot more confident. They just get on air.
We just hide it better, Kerry. That's all underneath. Oh, we're all over the place.
But I think we could learn from men in that regard. But what I've found is that women do need more training in the beginning, but give them that extra training and then I've put women on television and then they've been so good after a few training sessions. They've been like TV presenters. They're that good. So it's just about investing a little bit more in the beginning and then after that it really will serve the organisation that they're representing so good.
And
so
the media is about communication at the end of the day. It's that one-to-one connection that really is the winner. That's ultimately it, no matter how many training aspects you've put together. Presumably, baronhopkins.com is the best place to find out further details. We're going to come back to this, obviously, Kerry. There's a whole heap of things to go through that. But initially, if people are wanting to follow through, baronhopkins.com?
That's right, yes. Lamborghinis and they rented hummus. The party's on, so they're heading downtown. Everybody's looking for a come up, and they wanna know what you're about. Me in the middle with the one I love.
beautiful people.
Drop top designer clothes, front row fashion shows. What you do and who'd you know inside the world of
beautiful people.
Champagne and roll up nose, breathing up some broken holes. Surrounded but still.
Siren Radio.
Siren.
A fresh sound for Lincoln.
Siren
107.3. The Johnnies of the Lincoln Book Festival that just gets better and better each year, and a great excitement when we looked at the 28th of September programme, Saturday 28th of September, with the line of Houses and Ghosts, 6:15 at the Drill Hall, sponsored by the University of London. It's only the awesome Sarah Hogg, Viscountess Hailsham, who's with us and is online at present. Sarah, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Delighted to touch base with yourself. Obviously, former head of the Number 10 Policy Unit, one of the first presenters of Channel 4 News, a trustee of the historic Lincoln Trust. Let's face it, Sarah, the term Renaissance woman could have been defined to address you, really, in all sorts of ways.
Oh, well, I've had a lot of luck in my life.
Well, luck is that you make your own luck, Sarah. I'm sure you do from that point of view. But from there, of course, you're obviously looking forward to the first novel. We're looking forward to the first novel, Catherine's House, all about the whole notion of Kettlethorpe and so on. So, Sarah, would you like to tell us about your first novel and the impact of Catherine Swinford at Kettlethorpe and so on and so forth?
How lovely. Catherine Swinford was probably the most romantic figure of the English Middle Ages. She was the mistress of the great Duke of Lancaster, John of Gaunt. And then, late in life, an extraordinary thing to do in the 14th century, he actually married her. And by her, he had a family called the Beauforts, and Henry VII's only claim to the throne was that his mother was a Beaufort. So they had a huge impact on national life, not only in the 14th century, but through to the 15th and 16th. And sadly, there's very little of our house left at Kettlethorpe, but there is a wonderful medieval arch, and that was the start of the book.
And clearly, as I say, it's worked into all sorts of other ways as well from that point of view. Clearly, one of the things which fascinated me was how the actual occupants tie in with some of the greatest events in our history. So, I mean, Sarah, you moved with a lot of movers and shakers yourself, obviously, from that point of view, ever since you went to the University of Oxford back in the day with the philosophy, politics and economics badge to the whole thing. So, you know, from that point of view, would you like to just share some of the names and the sort of connections that we'll be hearing when you talk about of Houses and Ghosts and Catherine's House on the 28th?
Well, as I began to write the book about the people who lived here before and after Catherine, from the 11th century through to the 20th, I began to realise that they'd had kind of ringside seats at some of the most important events in England's history, And I got to thinking about why, and first of all, I thought it was proximity to Lincoln, great Roman city, England's greatest cathedral, fought over many times, the great Battle of Lincoln in 1217. But I began to realise more and more that actually it was the River Trent, which was critical to our history, because if you wanted to go north from the capitals in the south, London or Winchester, up to York or Edinburgh, you had to cross the Trent or you had to cross the Humber. And we're very close to the Trent at Kettlethorpe, and that's why it was so often in a war zone. Throughout the Civil War, and I write a chapter on a battle that took place at Kettlethorpe during the Civil War, it was particularly heavily fought over. And that's what made it so exciting right through, of course, to the Second World War when Lincolnshire was Bomber County, and again critical to our history with just about half the bomber command stations in our area.
Certainly, again, it's that living history that comes to the fore here. I'm going to introduce you, Sarah, now to a couple of our fine folk in the studio, one of whom is I'm sure be fascinated by the sort of impact of the text, etc. That's Kerry Hopkins, who is part of the wonderful Baron Hopkins Public Relations Agency. Kerry's also going to be heading down to Parliament in the near future. And I see back to yourself, of course, Sarah. Back in 2002, I see you were the first woman to chair a FTSE 100 company as chairman of the 3i Group, which I think we spoke about in times past. So it's interesting, given what we were just talking about, Kerry, from your own perspective about women and media broadcaster, etc. Anyway, Kerry, any questions you'd like to put to Sarah about, indeed, Catherine's house, or indeed, life in general?
Well, Sarah, good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm doing a survey at the moment of the FTSE 100. It's the first ever of its kind. It's the inquiry into gender representation of broadcast female spokespeople from the FTSE 100. So you used to be the CEO or chairman of 3i, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Well, actually,
it was only after I became chairman I realised there hadn't been a woman chairman in the FTSE 100 before.
Well
that.
Spotted, Sarah, well spotted, absolutely.
Oh, an amazing
I think it was the Times newspaper that spotted it first.
Mm.
That's an amazing achievement. Actually, though, 3i haven't responded to this survey.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. That's not good, is it?
We'll skip over that in the editing phase. Anyway, any other questions, Karen?
Oh, right. I was going to say, is there any way you can contact them to get it to fill in?
Well, you can quote me when you get in touch.
Okay, indeed.
We did do a lot of support for a set of surveys called the Female FTSE, which were all about surveying gender representation at the executive level in big companies. And we gave a lot of support to that. So we had a good history in the area, but maybe you just need to prod them again.
It'll move on, sir. I mean, again, it's part and parcel of the whole scenario. Now, we've also got a fine undergraduate with us as well, who hopefully will be attending the event itself on the 28th and doing
great.
Various social media. I'll look forward to coming as well. This is Emma Street. Emma, any thoughts of yourself on what we've been talking about with Sarah? Apart from, obviously, we'll step aside from the 3i at this particular stage.
Yes, I'll move swiftly on from that. I was just wondering, because, I mean, I had a look, obviously, at your history and jobs and all that sort of thing. Is there any kind of life experience or themes, perhaps, that, you know, are in Catherine's house? Any kind of political themes maybe running through, or, you know, where did you get the inspiration maybe for it?
The inspiration of the book came in a very funny way. I mean, Catherine Swinford has quite a following, people who admire her and her history. And we haven't been here very long when a lady wrote from Florida and said, could she come and visit? And she wrote a lovely letter, so of course. And she came, and she went under the arch. And as she was leaving, she picked up a small piece of gravel and said, could I take that home with me? And I thought, do I just tell her I had half a ton of gravel delivered last week? And I thought, no, maybe I don't do that, because it's an important memory to her. So I didn't, and she took this little stone home with her. And she then wrote to me saying she'd had it encased in gold and put on her mantelpiece. And it made me think about how objects hold the past, even if, you know, they come from a gravel pit a few weeks ago, they pick up the resonance of a place. And that's what made me start thinking about all the people who'd trodden these paths and walked these ways for 1,100 years.
Had it always been a dream in the back of your mind as you're working through your parliamentary work, your 3i work, indeed, in 2010, appointed chairman of the Financial Reporting Council? Was it always something that you thought, actually, I'd always like to create some of my own writing and fictional work and produce a novel?
Well, I started my career writing, very different kind of writing. I was an economics journalist, first of all with The Economist. I was their economics editor. And then on The Times, The Sunday Times, and I helped found The Independent and ran their business pages. That was sort of very different kind of writing. So, you know, it was a huge excitement and very different to write a novel.
I think it's fair to say, actually, without your good self back in the day of Channel 4 News, John Snow probably wouldn't be the sort of person we've come to appreciate today, basically. You probably learned it all from yourself, Sarah. That's the key thing. Different line there. Emma, anything else?
Do you regret waiting this long to write your first novel, or do you think it was the right time for you to write it?
I think it's the first time I've sort of had time to really have the space to think and do the research, because I did really a lot of research to trace the history of the other people who lived there. Quite a lot's known about Catherine, as much as you can know about anyone who lived in the 14th century. And there are some great biographies of her, particularly Alison Weir's. But, for example, Charles Hall, who lived here during the Civil War, I wrote part of my novel about his daughter and based it around the battle that took place, the tiny battle that took place here. So that took quite a lot of research. And I remember the huge excitement when, over at Hackthorne, I found the rent roll for Kettlethorpe in 1642. And that gives you a big buzz when you find documents like this. And going further back, church records. Linkage archives were really helpful too.
I have to say that it's an awesome festival. In any case, the Lincoln Book Festival, but with this coming up on the 28th of September, it's very much the cherry on top of all manner of marvellous things that we'll be speaking about from that point of view. Catherine's House, available presumably online and in all good bookstores and areas before. Would you recommend that people should actually read it before coming to see the talk and your good self, Sarah, or does it really not matter?
It'd be lovely they did, and then they can ask anything they'd like to about the history or the bits of mystery in it.
We can have some informed questioning, which is always great. And exactly. Carrie, we'll turn to your good self. Have we persuaded you for what we've been talking about to maybe turn up yourself for the 28th, or will you be otherwise entailed with your survey at Parliament and so on?
Whereabouts is it?
It's at the Lincoln Drill Hall in Lincoln on the 28th of September, and it's going to be fantastic. Will you just be able to actually attend the obviously you'll be at your own event, Sarah, but will you be checking out any of the other festivals? Is it a case of no, it's one night only?
No, I always come to the book festival, and I'm looking forward to it this year. It looks like we've got lots of great stuff.
Yeah, well, certainly Phil Hamlin-Williams, I think, has worked very hard as chairing and doing an excellent job there, and I was excited. It's all great stuff. Sarah, we've got two final questions for your good self. They're standard. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, Sarah?
Been great fun.
Excellent. A little bit of diversification there, but that's what we like, Carrie. Yeah, she's take herself on, and I'm sure you can mention
good
very
journalism
soon.
For
exactly.
You.
It's working through that process. So, Sarah, will you be kind enough to return and possibly either after the festival actually share with us some thoughts yourself with us on Siren Radio and come back?
I'd love to.
Sarah Hogg, Baroness Sarah Hogg, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Goodbye, and thank you.
Bye.
Her hair is hollow gold, her lips sweet surprise, her hands are never cold, she's got Betty Davis eyes, she'll turn her music on you, you won't have to think twice, she's pure as New York snow, she got Betty Davis eyes.
Okay, the Lincoln Book Festival just gets, as I said before, better and better. And when we move from Baroness Hogg at the end of the festival, we actually move to the start of the festival with, on the 24th of September, the awesome Melvin Burgess, once described as the godfather of young adult fiction in Britain, award-winning writer, including the Carnegie Medal for Junk. We'll also be talking about The Lost Witch, the gentleman who also wrote the novelisation of the film Billy Elliot. It's only Melvin Burgess. How are you, Melvin?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Yes, I'm very well.
Very good indeed. Now, Melvin, where are you going to take us in this Victorian setting for this school's event at 11 a.m. on the 24th of September at Lincoln College? What exciting things can people look forward to?
Well, I won't be doing any singing and dancing, you'll be pleased to hear. But,
oh, Melvin!
Yes, well, no, I know, disappointing, isn't it? But it's never gone down well. No, well, you know, I'll be talking about YA fiction, I'll be talking about writing and about reading, I'll be talking about my new books, I'll be talking about some plans for the future. I've got some exciting projects about diversity in writing and about, you know, trying to push those boundaries in YA and trying to, you know, move it forward as a genre into new territory, see what the future brings.
I summon you, you crowned runners, summon you from sleep, summon and command. No, it's not a new jingle or ident,
right.
But it's come, it's come from The Lost Witch.
It's come from The Lost Witch, yes. Well, The Lost Witch, that's my latest effort. And that was it's the first one in 5 years. It was a lot of hard work, that one, a lot of help from my editor. For a long time, I've wanted to write about, you know, what witches might really be, you know, the belief in the spirit world all around us, a hidden world underneath the physical one that we see. And I don't know if you know, I'm a great interest in mythology. The very first gods and goddesses that I loved were the Norse gods and goddesses that we know a little bit now from the Marvel films and so forth. And of course, everyone's absolute favourite is Loki. You know, he's
just a mischief maker. That's all. Just a little mischief maker.
Yeah, he's charming. He's clever. He's handsome. He's a complete psychopath. What's not to like? And he's a trickster figure. I just love those trickster figures in mythology, and kind of ties in with all the, you know, modern concern about grooming and about fake news, about lies, and so forth. So. he makes a bit of an appearance in this book with the usual disastrous and unexpected consequences.
Sounds good to me. Now, I cannot believe that it's literally 21 years since Junk was first published. Focusing on heroin-addicted teenagers on the streets of Bristol. Yeah. I suppose you could say, it's Trainspotting as well, the era of Irvin Welsh and so on.
Yeah, just a little earlier that was, yeah.
Have we learned anything? Is the prognosis good, Melvin, do you think? Or is it a case of, no, that's why I'm doing more fantasy?
The prognosis of, what do you mean, YA?
Because obviously what also launched post-Junk, etc., or just a few years prior to that, was, the Grand Rowling Empire, as in J.K. Rowling, and the Potterverse and so on and so forth. Was it a case of actually, at the end of the day, good fiction as metaphor, good fiction as allegory, it can actually also often say more than perhaps hard-hitting dramatic fiction?
Well, the great thing about books is the range and the diversity that you get in them. So there's a home for all of these things. I think gritty has taken perhaps a little bit of a downturn lately. I hope that it's going to come back again. I remember at one point everyone saying, children's books, YA books, it's all too depressing and it's all too miserable. There's room for everything. There's room for everything, I think. Using fantasy, Philip Pullman, who said, fantasy is great so long as it's actually about something. So all fiction that I like to read anyway has got to address something. I've got to have an interest. I want to come out of it being a little wiser than when I went in. But they both have their place, and they can both tell their own particular truths in different ways. The thing about fiction, of course, is that although it's all invented and it's all a pack of lies, you're trying to talk about something real, and that's true whether it's hard-hitting, gritty, stuff, or whether it's fantasy and mythology.
Absolutely. Okay, Emma Street, you'll be doubtless doing the social media and hopefully doing an interview with Melvin on the day itself, at the book festival. So any questions, any pre-questions you'd like to throw at the man at this particular stage?
I'm a reader of YA. I actually have a book blog and everything. I love reading YA. I do find that perhaps it's a genre that isn't quite as recognised maybe as it should be. I think there's still some doubts and misconceptions around what YA actually is. Why do you think it's important to try and push the genre and maybe break some of those boundaries that you were talking about earlier?
Well, yes, you're quite right. Children's fiction and fiction for young adults has always been the kind of poor relation, and there is in all literary endeavours, a huge amount of snobbery which goes on at various levels. Breaking boundaries and trying to, find new ways of using fiction. It's important whatever you're doing. It's important whether it's in picture books or in children's fiction or in adult fiction or in YA or in movies and in films, because this is how it moves on, this is how it makes itself fresh, this is how it finds new readers, this is how it addresses each new generation and tries to find ways forward. People are always talking about the death of a novel, but it's carried on partly because people love stories, but partly because it's endlessly reinventable. And I do find the exciting thing about reading and about writing is you say, this is different. I haven't come across anything quite like this before. This is a different voice. There's some interesting structural things going on. It's a type of story that it's got elements that I'm a bit unfamiliar with. So I just think that's the interesting thing in any artistic form, is how it's metamorphizing and how it's turning the present into the future. That, I should add, that's particularly true of writing stuff for young people, of course, because that's exactly what's happening with young people. When you go through your adolescence, you are making the future, you are becoming the future.
I just remember that actually we read Junk in our year 7 or year 8 English class, I think, when I was at high school.
They got one out to you quite early then, huh?
They grew up very quickly in Lincolnshire, Melvin. That's the important thing. Melvin, we're so pushed for time. I had a chance to actually bring in Kerry at this particular stage. So can we come back to you, Melvin, and have a few more words maybe in about 15, 20 minutes from now? Would that be possible?
You can do that, yes.
That would be perfect. Melvin Burgess, for the moment, many thanks, and we will return.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll still be here.
Of technology in the 21st century, and indeed jobs that actually are possibilities in terms of the cultural industries, etc. Brand new research by Atomic Research on behalf of Escape Studios, conducted among over 1,000 British parents of children aged between 5 and 18, shows that 44% of parents admit they will try to influence their child's choice of a university degree. So if you say, actually, I'd like to go and work as a VFX artist in the industry, working on shows like Chernobyl and movies like The Chronicles of Narnia, they might sort of say, oh, get yourself a proper job. Thankfully, our next guests did not subscribe to that. And so we have the industry's youngest female VFX artist, the fabulous Larabe Atta with us. How are you, Larabe?
I'm fine, thank you.
And we also have a key lecturer and soul from the wonderful digital company, VXX brand, etc. It's a wonderful Alar. How are you, Alar?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much.
It's Escape Studios, of course. If we can come to you first, Larabe, this particular narrative, which I honestly thought perhaps had gone back in the sort of mid-20th century, but clearly it's a case of, no, you get yourself a proper job, become a scientist or a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer, etc. And the notion of social media influencers, bloggers, gamers, not so popular with parents, at least.
Yes, I can totally understand where parents come from. They're, like any other parents, they're concerned about their kid's future and what career they're choosing. So all they want to do is guide and do their best to guide them into the right onto the right path. But I think they also need to understand that in the last 10 years, especially, the technology has evolved so much. There's so much creative content being produced out there, especially VFX, what the industry I'm part of. You can watch, you can see so much films and TV shows are being produced. You can go on Netflix. There's two or three shows easily you can see being released every day or almost every week. So there's so much content out there that's being produced. So I think this is also our responsibility to get out there to reach and educate the youngsters and parents and show them and expose them to these fields and these tools that what exactly is happening in the industries and from this studies itself from 2017. The net worth, a massive $101.5 billion you know, contributing to UK's economy, and there were 2 million jobs out there in these fields. So we just need to get out there more and educate youngsters about what's available to them.
are we living in a golden age when it comes to the dream academy of movies at large? I mean, is it a case of that, you know, we look back at the end of the 21st century, if, of course, we still have our planet then, and say, oh, those early decades, we were producing so much great stuff now, it was truly a golden age?
It is definitely the creative arts business itself is growing massively. So at the moment there are, you know, 2 million jobs estimated to actually be available. But it also matters the way you educate the student and the talent, and the way we've always done it in Escape Studios is that you kind of reverse engineer the industry approach. You focus on what is it that the industry needs, what type of artist is the industry looking for. And this is something that parents maybe do not expect from arts education, is that they think art is something nebulous or lacking focus. But it is possible to teach this with a very clear focus of actually getting a job as well.
Has technology also improved the notion of where you don't necessarily have to be in the square mile of Soho, London, to work in the film industry? You can indeed start producing stuff, even if you're in Lincoln, Newcastle, or indeed Skegness.
Yes, that's definitely true. And cloud computing is a great example of that. So, which actually allows for smaller companies to render, for example, remotely. So you can work on bigger shows, and that's one of the kind of features of the whole creative arts industry, is that it's actually made out of a lot of small companies with less than 10 people each, and this is something that technology and the required technology skills are, you know, have been able to. So I'm going to phrase that again.
Development. It's okay. I mean, I get the point. Are we talking really about Imagineering? I mean, if we can come to Lorraine for a moment. So, I mean, your official line is a VFX artist, which is visual effects from that point of view. I mean, is the notion of thinking up ideas and concepts, I mean, do you get a sort of storyboard laid out, or is it just a case of you get, I don't know, the directors coming to you and say, Lorraine, we'd like you to do this, 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 and this, make it so?
So yeah, our process is we are based in the post production houses. So in pre production is where the clients will have their storyboarding and concept designing done, and then in the production process is where the film is shot and produced, and then we get all the material. We come in the post production process, where we get all this content and footage, where we then use different tools and softwares to make all the CGI elements and put them all together and send them out to the clients.
As the old maxim, that actually what you can conceive, then you can achieve. And presumably, if you're looking at the broader scopes of human activity and so on, that whether you're Elon Musk looking to actually build trips for spaceships to Mars, for instance, you've got to actually put this into a way that people understand. And that presumably is where visual effects can really impact in terms of how people can actually see their dreams being manifest.
Yeah.
Let's open it up a wee bit. Kerry Hopkins is with us on the studio today. We're listening to that, Kerry. What do you make of this whole sort of wonderful world? Is it a case of if you had your time again, you say, the heck with journalism, I'm going to go into Imagineering and VFX design?
Well, I actually used to do public relations for Disney. I used to work at Disney, working on their films. And
a little company you may have heard of.
Disney, guys. Pixar, I mean, stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting area. I mean, my father wanted me to do business studies because that's the degree that you get a job with. And I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to do history or geography or something like that. And anyway, really, what degree you do, it's not really relevant sometimes in some professions. Because when I did end up in public relations, everybody had done degrees in geography and history anyway. Not even hardly any had done PR degrees, although this was 20 years ago. What's interesting about this research, I think, is there's actually a new degree out there that is for people who want to be a blogger. I read in the newspapers, there's a new degree in the UK if you want to be a blogger, because YouTubers can earn £150,000 a year, so why not have it as a degree?
influencers, social influencers, they're all actually tapping into that scenario. I mean, Larabe, is it a case of you can now turn around to your parents and say, there, you see, I told you so, I was right all along?
They are so massively proud of me, and I'm happy I chose this path. At the beginning, my father was concerned, for sure, and he was not really...
Be a doctor, Larabe, be a doctor, for goodness sake.
He wasn't sure if I should get into VFX, and I also did go back to engineering to see if that would work for me, but that absolutely didn't work for me, so I got into VFX at a very young age. That was after my A-levels, when I was a bit lost, and that is when I needed some guidance. And my brother, because he's a musician himself, and he was like, maybe why don't you do VFX, you could work on my music videos. And that's when I started searching for courses, and I came across Escape Studios. And I did enrolled for a course which was about five and a half months, and right after that I was offered jobs straight away. I was working for Disney commercials, George Michael promo videos, and then I started getting film projects.
How long ago was this?
I was long ago. I did my course in 2006.
Start of the century then, obviously. So, yeah, here we are.
I was 19 back then.
It's quite male-driven, male-heavy, isn't it?
I was the only girl and I was the youngest in my course, yes. But I was fully focused, and I knew coming from Pakistan, where we don't have these schools, we don't have these opportunities, I knew I was given a tool, an opportunity, I need to make the most of it, and I was fully focused, and that's what I did at the end.
And the rape, has that improved in terms of gender over the years? I mean, people listen to this, so there's more of a balance in the industry, hopefully?
Yeah, absolutely, because also just last three years, I got back into the industry. Just 5 years before that, I got married, I became a mom, so I had a 5 years gap.
You're doing it all, let's face it, Larabe. You are a Renaissance woman.
Doing my best, yeah.
Allah, if we can come to you finally, just briefly, to talk about, obviously, Escape Studios, the 21st century Disney. It'll happen, I know. I'm putting that positive thing out there from that perspective. Maybe you want to go even higher. You know, you want to take on the routine. Where do you see the future of Escape and careers like Larabe's, etc.? Is there a case of actually there are no limits, because those are only artificial boundaries that we set upon ourselves? Ultimately, this creative digital art space that we work within is something which is going to literally run and run.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it is an expanding business throughout UK, so similarly in Escape we continue to expand the scope of courses we offer.
Could we escape out of Brexit? No, I won't say anything about that. It's a different line entirely. But where could people go to find out further details about what we've been chatting about this morning, and indeed Escape Studios and so on?
So, since it is the time that a lot of students are you know, receiving their A levels, mm-hmm. and choosing what to actually do for the degree if they haven't made the choice yet, then they can simply go to escapestudios.com and learn about their undergraduate degrees, or alternatively they can check out UCAS if they want to see.
Access the details from there. Fantastic. Exactly. And returning very briefly to Larabe, I know that colleagues at Royal Holloway College were fascinated and very enthused about the series Chernobyl, so I'll pass on the details that obviously you've worked on. That it was probably your bits that actually they thought, that's fantastic, that's great.
No, I would just avoid saying any projects and the company I've worked for at the moment, that's because they haven't allowed me to.
Okay, that's fair enough then. We won't talk about that. We'll talk about, obviously, your work within the industry, which is fantastic on that basis. Many thanks indeed, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Take care.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Rach.
Of the Melvin Burgess number continues, and brief musical break, and lo and behold, because so much good stuff, Melvin, that it's just awesome. We just can't get enough of you in so many ways.
didn't I know?
No, it's true. And we've got a chance now for Curry to hopefully have more of a well, much more than the first sort of part, because Emma had to leave. And Curry Hopkins, ace journalist and PR soul, I'm sure if you weren't tempted by Sarah Hogg, then surely guest author Melvin Burgess on the 18th, on Tuesday the 24th of September, has to be a grand attendee or thing to attend.
Definitely, if he's going to be in the local area. Melvin, you mentioned earlier that about psychopaths.
We always want to talk about psychopaths. Yes. Sociopaths, maybe, but you know, let's go psychopath, yeah.
Yeah, so attractive in fiction, not so great in person, of course.
Children's author, is that right? Was there a psychopath in one of your children's books?
Or young adult?
Young adult books, really, rather than children's books, which is quite a significant distinction, really. It's an entirely different kettle of fish, really.
I don't know. I mean, many of those Enid Blyton characters in Famous Five, I think they were classic psychopaths, Uncle Quentin. But don't get me started on that one, Melvin. Let's stay young adult, shall we?
Yeah, what's interesting
Melvin, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, what's interesting when people talk about people sometimes, say, oh, he was one of the nicest people I've ever met. And that's what they say when somebody's just been charged with murder, you know, or terrorism and stuff.
Well, you know, that is an interesting area. I mean, I did write a book some years ago called Nicholas Dane on the back of all that dreadful abuse that was coming out of care homes. And I interviewed people who'd been through the care home system in Manchester and people who'd ran them nowadays, and the lawyer actually that dealt with the case. And you know, it's one of those classic you know, grooming situations in which these people were just so convincing, so charming, everyone would trust them, and of course they were, you know, committing abuse to sort of dozens or even hundreds of kids over decades. So it's you know, it's a phenomenon. I don't know whether such a person is a psychopath, but certainly a sociopath. I mean, in the new book, Loki, you know, the Norse god,
mischief maker,
god of mischief maker, trickster figure. You know, it is very much the same thing. This is someone who's very convincing and always has excellent advice, but somehow or other, it always turns out disastrous. So that was the character that I was talking about, the mythological Norse god Loki.
I've got to say as well, Melvin, I'm very impressed with Crispy Whispers, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Oh,
stories to snack
Crispy
on.
Whispers, yeah. Yes, stories to snack on. Well, it was some years ago, you know, when I was first getting into Twitter, I was thinking to myself, I was very interested in how you would tell a story using the new social platforms, and I decided to try and tell very, very short stories, flash fiction, really, in a series of tweets. So I had quite a pleasant year or so churning out these little very dark stories, and it's a remarkable thing. I've tried it as well in creative writing workshops. You know that if you make a demand on someone to make a story, the mind just forms a story really, really quickly. So no matter what strange material you start off with, it will end up in a little story with a beginning, middle, and end, and so forth. But the route that it can take, if you're absolutely put on the spot and you have to make it up as you go along in a very short form like that, can be very interesting. And the process of tweeting as well, these little short packages, not rhythmically the same or not rhyming, but within that, a little short, the little short form of the tweet, it does give a particular rhythm to a story. It's very interesting.
I think the President of the United States has also found a similar thing with respect to tweets. Kerry, I was just going to comment there in terms of stories and such, like, obviously even from journalism to public relations. Did you find that there's a storyline to every little story feature that you're putting together? That you think, yes, so what's the story here? How can we get the story out there?
Yes, good question. I mean, there's several elements to a good story, I suppose. Chiefs is the abbreviation that we would go with. C stands for celebrity, H stands for forgotten, I stands for information, E for events, F for finance, and S for sex and scandal. And if you've got more than, more than three elements to that
to, you know, more than three of those things to a story, then it's compelling.
We have a winner.
You're onto a winner.
Yes, yeah, you're onto a winner.
Yeah, I did a brief training as a journalist, and they were always telling me, you know, what's the story, what's the story? And right. I did, at that point, I think it was many, many years ago now, but I did feel, you know, sometimes the story imposed on what had actually happened rather left the events stranded.
Yes, and also you've literally got 4 seconds to say what the story is, and some stories don't really, you know, you can't get the story out in
sometimes,
4 seconds.
Sometimes there's not a story there.
I'm just looking, Melvin, at the feedback that you've had from students who've attended these workshops, who've having capital letters. I loved it. I thought it was fab. 3! You are hilarious! Ha ha ha! And then the classic, it wasn't what I expected. I thought it would have been boring, but it really wasn't. I'm going to try and read some of his books now. Well, result there, I think, Melvin.
I know where they came from, Sam. I did a book called Doing It, which was a very rude book. I called it my nobby book for boys. And it wasn't a book that went into schools, needless to say, very often. But I did some years ago get invited, not only into England, but with the Scottish Book Trust to do a tour up around there. And we did a number of schools, based around doing it. And it was the best fun I ever had, of course, because, you know, it's supposed to be funny. Well, hopefully it's funny. The kids sort of found it very funny. They very much relate to it. And so, you know, I got those great results. It's just a shame that... that kind of material isn't something that you can get into schools very often, because it certainly encouraged a lot of reading, I think.
Exactly, and when you've got key stages and national curriculum and league tables and league charts, etc., who knows where we're going, but that's another issue for another day.
Yeah.
I've got to use this last one.
Fun there, eh?
I think it probably needs a slight northeastern accent to say Melvin Burgess is an absolute top lad. He's loads of banter.
Aye.
It was a complete belter of an afternoon. 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
great.
It would be a Scottish accent there.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the northeastern accent has a bit in common, I think.
I think so. Geordies and the connections are there. I didn't feel it was going to be received pronunciation Oxford English, but you know,
no, certainly not.
Exactly. Although maybe in the 21st century, you could obviously see those quotes and more at melvinburgess.net. A reminder, of course, that as far as the Lincoln Book Festival is concerned, it's Tuesday the 24th at Lincoln College, 11 a.m. People can actually go from that point of view. Are you looking forward to coming to Lincoln, Melvin, or even to Melvin Lincoln?
I haven't been over to that part of the country for a long time. I'm looking forward to it very much.
And that's why we say thanks to ace author Melvin Burgess, who of course is coming to the Lincoln Book Festival. Thanks earlier to Baroness Sarah Hogg. Thanks to Kerry Hopkins and Emma Street for participating and co-hosting the show, etc. Of course, Kerry's great event coming up very shortly as well, also in early September. And thanks to Larry Batter. Thank you, dear listener. We wrap up with Inspired On Air's classic phrase, of course, before we're back on the third Wednesday of September. After 1, 2, 3.
FM.
Be inspired.
Online. Mobile. Mobile. This is.
This is.
Siren Radio. Lincoln.